roll, baby, on MMA Junkie Radio with Gorgeous George and Goz. This is what we do and why we do it, baby. We rollin'!
Covering MMA from all over the world, this is the premier stop for all your combat sports needs. MMA Junkie Radio from the Mandalay Bay Resort and Casino in the fight capital of the world, Las Vegas, Nevada. The lights are on and the mics are hot. It's time to get your MMA fix, junkies. Take it away, Big John.
Gorgeous George and Goz, are you ready? Junkie Nation, are you ready? Well, let's get it on.
From the fight capital of the world inside our beautiful home in Mountain's Edge, Las Vegas, it's the MMA Junkie Radio Show, the only show that matters. And I'm your host, Gorgeous George. With me, as always, is the devious and dastardly Goz. Ari's co-host. What's up, Goz?
What's up, homeboy?
Not much. Getting excited. We got one, two, three. Wow. Three more sleeps. And it's UFC 251 time. Quick plug, UFC 251 watch along. Saturday, Sportscaster. Goz and I will be watching the fights along with you. Whether you get the pay-per-view or not, we're going to be on. We're going to be talking about it. So hang out with us. We have a chat room. And it's going to be a good time. As we watch three title fights, including Kamaru Usman versus George Masvidal. You got Alexander Volkanovski versus Max Holloway. And then for the vacant title, it'll be Peter Yan versus Jose Aldo. Man, it's a great, great card. And it's all coming together. All the fighters are in Abu Dhabi. So we're going to talk about their trek over there, their journeys. We'll recap some of the stuff we've seen on Embedded. I think there's like three of them out so far. And, of course, once we leave you, I guess the first fight is that scale. And then Saturday night, it is on. But we're going to, do our best to keep you excited here on Fight Week and prep you for Saturday night's epic night. We'll also catch up with our colleague, Danny Segura. We're going to bring him back, talk a little bit more about the reception he got for Hablemos MMA, a podcast he's going to launch, where he's going to basically cater to the Latino crowd and have fighters, have guests, and talk a little bit about this great sport of ours, but in Espanol. So we'll bring him on, and we'll also get his thoughts on everything going on here during fight week. So buckle up, folks. It's MMA Junkie Radio on a Wednesday night.
The Counter, an NFL podcast from USA Today Sports, featuring For the Win's Stephen Ruiz and Chris Corman.
I know people are like just assuming that this is an upgrade at the quarterback position, but I don't think we could say that for a fact. I'd say it's a downgrade.
He never really had game-to-game impact, just coming off the edge and destroying people that we thought when we saw his athleticism in college and at the combine.
The Counter, diving deeper into the NFL with advanced stats, film study, and expert guests. This is The Counter.
Listen and subscribe to The Counter on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn, or wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
All right, Goz, let's blast through some news real fast, and then we'll zero in on the pay-per-view. That disturbing video of Mike Perry and the old man, you saw that, right?
Oh, yeah. That was pretty brutal.
What do you think? Can he escape getting cut by the promotion? I mean, look, he's going to have assault and battery charges. Obviously, it's all on video. Towards the end there, I've only looked at it once, if I'm being honest. And I don't know the backstory, but it looked like both did engage with each other. And so there might be like, hey, are you pressing charges? Are you pressing charges? I don't know if it'll just get squashed that way. But it was his behavior afterwards and what he's done recently on social media that might get him in a little bit of hot water.
Yeah, I mean, it's just not a good look. I mean, I don't know how he gets by on this one. For one, just a pro fighter should not be engaging in that type of activity. And two, obviously the combatants, there was a little bit of an age gap there, right? And then just the things that came out of his mouth weren't good. And when if you match it up to social media, he's going to plead the case that he didn't do nothing. But I think a judge can probably look through his tweets, his interviews, and see that, well, I don't know. If I'm not an MMA fan, I just look at that and go, man, this is an angry cat. Like, this just seems like a dude that's ready to explode at any time. So who knows what they're going to do. And on the UFC's part, especially with just the direction that this country's going in right now, this seems like something that's not going to go well for him. And it sucks because he had such a good performance, you know, just that story of coming out with his girlfriend in his corner. It was all positive stuff.
And Mike looking Perry. Good in the wrestling and jiu-jitsu department that that you usually don't attribute to him having, you know, as a strength, not to disrespect him, but his hands is where his strength is. And that's what he likes to do. But he had a good all-around showing the other day.
He has one saving grace.
What's that?
If I'm him, I start saying, well, they didn't do nothing to Connor, so I should be fine. He did the same thing, right?
It's true.
I would put that out there and pray that that's enough to probably have me keep my job, you know, some sort of suspension or something. You know, suspensions with the UFC and don't make much sense because
it's they have tough times during COVID-19. We're all losing it, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. That's another thing. Like where he's hanging out. I don't know, man. Mike Perry's different, you know?
Let's talk about another Mike. Mike Brown won't be in the corner of Jorge Masvidal. That's basically been his head coach for a lot of his career. And even though, you know, the American Top Team boasts an impressive lineup of coaches, and Jorge will be in good hands, there's still something to a guy that's been on the ride with you. And so Mike Brown just won't be in Yas Island, as far as I know, or at least not for this first batch of fights. What do you think?
I think that I think the way it breaks down is I think Mike Brown is his lead corner, but not his head coach. But still, like anybody who knows Mike as a fighter, he was tremendous. As a coach, he might even be better. He has just this way of calming his fighters down, making adjustments during fights. Is definitely going to be missed. I know a lot of you people think, hey, at the end of the day, they close the door, there's two guys in there and a ref, and that's it. And sometimes you're right. You know, sometimes there are fighters that just don't, they just have muscle memory and they react. But this type of coach, this type of team, the environment that they breed, I think a lot of those guys and gals listen to their coaches very well. If you look at some of them fighting, I point to Joanna Jędrzejczyk in her last fight, lots of adjustments in that fight. That Mike Brown, I mean, think about what she had to go through, you know, just the beatings that they were giving each other, and that dude kept her in the fight. So to not have Mike Brown, especially in this situation right now, that's going to be a very, very big blow.
The fighters are doing some rounds of media. We'll discuss a little bit about that with Danny Segura, who'll join us in a little bit. But Paige VanZant is a fighter who, to me, it looks like she's just going through the motions. I think she's just not going to be in the UFC past this fight. I think it's a mistake, but what are your thoughts on her? Like, you know, Sage Northcutt left. I mean, it was her and Sage were all the rage. Mm-hmm. And they've done well. It's not like they've sucked.
In the
I think
cage.
Sage was 5-2 or 6-2 or something like that before he moved over to 1, which isn't bad, man. But what do you think? She's popular, you know. She's a good fighter. She's not like I don't think she's championship caliber, but she's still young. What can this be salvaged on Saturday if she has a great performance and says the right things?
Absolutely. I think if she has a great performance, I think they keep her around. She'll continue to make money. But really, I think her gamble is somewhat worth it because the worst case scenario, she gets to do something that she's already claimed that she makes more money doing anyway, right? Outside of the cage. I think she's become a pretty big enough name where the UFC helps, but I don't know it's what like pushes her anymore. You know, she's always going to be that Dancing with the Stars winner, and that carries a lot of weight in Hollywood. And I think, worst case scenario, let's just say she wants to continue fighting. Bellator's there. Her husband's with Bellator. That's probably a good fit for her. They always seem to be pretty cool with fighters and them wanting to take their own direction with their career. That's something that Bellator's really big on, you know, the entrances and really you look at some of the fighters that are there and what they do for like a guy like Rampage and King Mo, and they really like these personas, and Paige VanZant's bringing one over. So I think that would be probably a perfect fit. So if things don't go her way, I think Bellator would be a really good fit for her.
You see her coming down the ramp like in some cha-cha outfit, one of her dance outfits from Dancing with the Stars.
Well, yeah, they let you do just about anything. So you could imagine maybe a bunch of dancers coming out with her or something, some kind of choreographed thing.
Yeah.
But I mean, think about like who's over there, right? Alima-Lay McFarlane. That'd be a great fight, right?
Yeah, I forgot about her. She's got epic entrance.
So you have those that fight. You're almost guaranteed two of those, because if Paige wins, for sure, either one, I think they'll still be a rematch. And I don't know that Paige is like the type of girl that comes out and just gets KO'd. And I don't know that Alima-Lay is that girl anyway, unless it's soccer mom, right? So mm-hmm. I think either way, you'll probably see a decent fight and a second fight. And I think that alone will probably get Bellator their money.
Yeah. We're going to talk a little bit about this with Danny Segura, who will join us in a little bit. But a lot of people have been asking me, so I just wanted to throw that out. The BMF title is not at stake here. So if Kamaru Usman wins, he will have defended his undisputed UFC welterweight title. That'll be his second title defense. And if Jorge Masvidal beats him, he will win the UFC, the undisputed UFC welterweight title. And that will join his BMF title that he has. He's not putting up the BMF title, folks. It's just for the welterweight title. So either way, Jorge will still have his belt. And we don't know if that belt will ever get defended or what it'll be. I think for a while I thought it was going to be maybe like the hardcore belt in WWE, and you would just see it from time to time. But believe it or not, that question got asked a lot. Goes, what have you gathered from the three embeds that have gone up? Anything stand out? Anything you're enjoying seeing or not seeing? Or
about the BMF? Or
no, just the embedded shows, you know, like the travel that the fighters are going through, the spirits, you know, of positivity or any negativities that you've seen?
Positivities? Actually, I haven't seen any negatives. It seems like everybody's been in really good spirits, joking around and having fun. I mean, they have to go through a lot to just to get on that island.
Fight week, huh?
Oh yeah, but you see like the different demeanors, right? You see like Alexander Volkanovski's like joking around and playful, and you see Rose and she's just kind of like quiet, and different personalities, but they're all on that same crazy island. Some of the coaches we've had, we had a conversation with John Anik before he left. We've had conversations with John Morgan since he's been on the island, and Eric Nixick that we caught up with today on Sportscaster. So everybody seems to be in somewhat good spirits. At the end of the day, there's still a lot of questions out there, though, that I think need to be resolved, that it seems like people just don't have the answers to. So hopefully as this week progresses, they'll get some of that information. And, you know, that next group of fighters that are going to be fighting, it's going to be very valuable for them, the same way it was in Jacksonville and the Apex, just knowing how things work. I'm sure it's something that's weighing on their minds, but I think it's gone pretty well. It's been fun. I'm what a difference a second would make. I kind of wanted to see what would happen if
a second.
Yeah, if somebody would have said, "Hey, Jorge, what do you think of this picture?" That would have been enough time for him to turn around and probably see Kamaru Usman come out of the elevator.
That was in Vegas, right? Before they left.
Yeah, yeah. That would have been kind of interesting, right?
Yeah, because they had to be pulled apart in Super Bowl press row, mm-hmm. or media row, radio row, whatever it's called. So, yeah, it would have been interesting to see. Now, Usman was walking with three gents. That's not to say Jorge's pretty much scared of any situation, but who knows? I mean, that's a hotel that's just kind of run by the UFC. So I imagine that aside from their COVID team or their PR team, there's probably got to be a security detail somewhere or not too far away to at least intervene.
I know if I saw both of them enter a building, I would make sure there's a security team there. Mm-hmm. A big one.
Yeah. Yeah.
Three-piece in a soda was not that long ago.
Well, I know, but you saw Kamaru. He had two guys with him. I think George isn't stupid either. I think he sizes up who he's with. You know, he didn't walk in and say, "What's up, Ray and Kimbo? You both mm-hmm. want some?" I mean, you know, he's a Superman of sorts. I get it. He's a street fighting.
He also didn't ask, "Hey, did he make weight or superhero. Anything like that?" Yeah. Right? Like, he'll get down if he needs to.
He will.
But he's smart. He likes money.
Speaking of, are we going to go 6 for 6? Are all the title fighters, the ones involved in title fights, they're going to make weight?
Man, putting me on the spot.
Yeah.
That means if it happens, it's my fault. I'm going to say yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. You?
Yeah, I'm gonna go with the positivity as well, and I think they can do it. Really, we're okay. Look,
who are we talking about here?
One by one, Aldo's tough because he's a traditional 45er, but mm-hmm. he's already done it once, so we know it can be done. He strikes me as a thorough professional. I don't see Jan not making it. Now let's go to the other ones. Holloway, he gets it done and then eats his cupcakes. And Volkanovski doesn't seem like some chump. He used to play professional rugby, so that just seems like a professional athlete.
They weigh in quite a bit.
That knows what he needs to do. Do they, or is that a sarcastic?
No, they do.
Rugby players?
Yeah.
Why?
Well, going through that system. Like, I know a couple guys that
They can't show up out of shape. Yeah.
Okay. And they're constantly making sure their weight's on point and stuff like that.
So really,
one of our listeners does that.
We're sweating Usman only because for 36 hours they told him, Burns has COVID. That fight with Burns is off. I'm not sure if they told him, but hang in there. We're looking. Or if they just told him that and that's it.
They had
if
to.
If somebody tells me that, I might head to Texas Day Brazil and drown my sorrows in food. Mm-hmm. And then on the Masvidal side, obviously, he had no idea less than a week ago that he'd be fighting. You know, he thought it was going to be Burns and him, and he'd be on his couch in Miami watching the fight.
He's teasing us all, though, with that damn pizza.
That pizza stop wasn't good.
And you know what, though? Okay, look, man, I ain't no expert. Maybe I am, because I've eaten a lot of fucking pizza in my day, all mm-hmm. right? But for as much as people say Italy, this and that pizza did not look that impressive. That looked like something they handed you at a ball game or something. Like, I was expecting something looking crazy. That just looked kind of basic, didn't it? Now, granted, I know.
And I doubt he had eight pieces. At worst, he had a bite or two. Price if he had any. That Jorge Masvidal, something else. He was checking in. He flew with a robe. He checked in with a robe and it clearly said Versace, so he's flaunting some of the dough he's got. So good for him.
He gets it, though, doesn't he?
Yeah,
like he does. Every move he makes, I think he shows us more and more he's getting it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, folks, UFC 251. We have a watch along on Saturday. Check it out. We'll keep giving you reminders. You know, on our social media, I'm at MMA Junkie George. Goes is at the Goes. So we're going to be doing that on Instagram and Twitter because it'll be fun times on Saturday night. And it's the standard start time of 10 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Pacific for the pay-per-view. Now, there's some pretty good prelims. You know, the whole card is pretty impressive, so we'll probably duck in there a little bit early. So you go to www.sportscaster.com/MMAJunkie, and you'll see Goz and I there having a good time. If you order the pay-per-view, good on you. You can mute the guys and listen to Goz and I for a little while and go back and forth. And if you don't order it, then we'll tell you what's happening because that's the beauty of the watch-along. You watch along with us, but we're ordering the pay-per-view and we're watching it. And we'll, at some point, we turn into play-by-play and color commentator as we eat pizza, drink beer, and make bets. So join us on Saturday. Something on your mind?
Well, you brought up bets, and mm-hmm. I wanted to talk a little bit about bets. Can you share that parlay?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe. I rolled my eyes at it. But if you can get enough people to jump on board, I might just do it as like a giant Junkie Nation coalition. Because at the end of the day, the guys on your ticket, those are some gangsters that you're rolling with.
Mm-hmm. So you have Jose Aldo, Max Holloway, and Jorge Masvidal. $100 will pay $2,600. $10 will pay $26. $50 will pay $1,300. No, 10 will pay 260. What am I thinking? 10 will pay 260. 25 will pay like 650. 50 will pay 1300. But a $100 parlay pays 2600 if you take Aldo, Holloway, and Masvidal. They're all underdogs.
Who are you sweating out the most in that one?
Well, not to sound like a jerk, but probably the first one because, you know, you want to stay alive.
No, I'm just saying out of the three, which one are you like, once this one is completed, I feel a lot better.
I would say Masvidal because he just didn't have the camps like the other five. The other five knew the date. They, you know, look, that doesn't make Masvidal a bum going into this fight. Not at all. Dustin Poirier said he helped him with his camp. George told us, my coach lives with me. So he had some preparation. He stayed prepared. Maybe some of them even felt like, you know, stay in shape. Something might happen when 5 weeks ago it looked like the fight did go in another direction. Maybe he told himself something could and would happen. But I still think there's something to proper notice and proper preparation. So we'll see. Holloway's facing a guy he's already lost to, who's only lost once in his career. Jorge's facing a guy who's only lost once in his career and never in the UFC. Neither has Volkanovski, never in the UFC. So maybe I should be saying Holloway, because Holloway's already lost to him once. And then with Aldo, I feel like I'm getting one of the greatest featherweights of all time, one of the greatest UFC champions of all time. He had 7 title defenses, but he's an aging Aldo in a weight class where it's only his 2nd time competing there against the guy who's never lost. So, you know, look, that's why the parlay pays so much, because it's a long shot. But you're still, you know, you're still backing 3 pretty damn good fighters. But I guess I'll still go with the guy that had less preparation in Masvidal.
I think Aldo would be the one that scares me the most in that. Because at least with Masvidal, he's shown us with the flying knee that he can end things quick. You know, true. There's that possibility.
And he's got one punch power like what he did with Till.
And then
I think I should have said Holloway, because he's flat out lost to the guy once. You know, that's hard. That's not easy to overcome. Mm-hmm. You ask Holloway, hey man, does Jose Aldo have a chance? You know, when they fought when they had already fought one time, I think Holloway probably had some swag. You know, hey man, I beat him once. Like, I'm not, you know, I know the recipe to how to beat this guy. Well, now that's got to be how Volkanovski's feeling about him. So it's as simple as that, I guess.
I would say that Max Holloway is a guy that can crack. I would always feel like I'm somewhat in that fight. I think in some Jose Aldo fights, you can just kind of tell when he's there and when he's not. Mm-hmm. And that would drive me crazy. If I can already identify that this is not going to be his night, that's the worst. Just sit through that fight when you got money on it.
Yeah. All right. Well, listen, Dan, Tom, you know, you're going to see some breakdowns on the front page if you want a little bit more detail on some of that stuff that the fight analyst obsesses over. He watches a lot of film. He picks up a lot of things there. So I would recommend listening to him before you make your bets. I imagine he probably likes the other side. And then we have a few of the guys on the staff that, you know, I think everybody pretty much picks over 500 except for Matt Erickson. But if you pick the top 3 guys, which is obviously always Dan, and I think Nolan's up there, and I think you'll see it. There's a lot of common picks, you know, and it's for a reason. So definitely, you know, do your homework, follow your gut, and have fun. And join us on Saturday for our UFC 251 watch along. All right, Goes, why don't we catch up with Danny Segura? All right, there he is, our colleague Danny Segura, who's going to be hosting Hablemos MMA on July 27th. We talked about it with him a few days ago, and we figured, you know what, we're going to keep the promotion going, because at least from the people I talked to, everybody was excited. I got a lot of Latino friends who can't wait to download this. So welcome back, Danny. How you doing? And tell us, first of all, how was the reception on your end when you told everybody about the upcoming podcast?
Well, first of all, thanks for having me back on, guys. It's always an honor to be on MMA Junkie Radio. And yeah, I got pretty good feedback. There was a lot of people replying, you know, reaching out, saying that, you know, it's so cool that they've been wanting content in Spanish. Tons of fans reached out. A few fighters reached out as well. So, you know, from all angles, it seems a lot of people are interested and excited for this project just as much as I am, which makes me even more excited and more happy about getting this going. But yeah, exciting stuff, man. And I can't wait till I can share more details and this thing actually rolls out. I think it's going to be a lot of fun and it's going to do well.
Danny, you know, we've seen kind of like the UFC go through a little wave there with Mexican fighters that came through. And then in South America, it seems like there's been a few countries here and there that have really, really popped with MMA. They're starting to like it a lot. Can you maybe isolate 2 countries other than Brazil that are really becoming a hotbed for MMA?
Oh, yeah. I mean, outside of Brazil and Mexico, I think if we're talking about Latin America, obviously Mexico would be the second after after Brazil. But beyond that, I mean, Chile is big for MMA. We obviously saw the UFC go there. Argentina as well. I mean, we have a PFL champion that's Argentinian. Santiago Ponzinibbio is Argentinian. Bruno and Guido Canetti, the two brothers, one's Combate America's champion. The other guy, you know, fights in the UFC bantamweight division. So Argentina's also a hotbed. And then Peru's also a hotbed. Where you guys come from, there's a lot of warriors that come out of that country as well. Enrique Barzola, Claudio Puelles. I guess Valentina Shevchenko is an honorary Peruvian, I guess. And so many others. So I would say those are the countries that follow Mexico and Brazil, but all over Latin America as well as Spain, MMA is growing and picking up a lot of strength.
All right, well, that's awesome to hear, and we've noticed it as well. I'm glad the UFC, you know, pre-COVID was doing some of those visits out there to some of those countries. Uruguay got a stop as well, and we're hoping Peru gets a stop, Colombia gets a stop. You know, this is a sport that needs to touch all of the countries. All around the world. But yeah, South America, Central America, along with Mexico has really, really been popping. And of course, the United States is you know, let's not shy away from the fact that there's huge Latino communities within the United States where the UFC has kind of appealed to them. I mean, Cain Velasquez, you know, would go almost every other fight somewhere in the Los Angeles area or somewhere in California or Texas because they knew they could appeal. So, yeah, I mean, there's Spanish speakers all over the world, and I'm glad it was well-received on your end, and we're going to continue with the promotion as much as we can. Anytime we can get you on here through July 27th, we're going to do it. And again, folks, Hablemos MMA with Danny Segura dropping on July 27th. He's already got some guests lined up, and I'm sure he'll, when he's able to release all that, he will. Danny, let's pivot to UFC 251, which takes place on Saturday. Tell me now, there's been a couple of embeddeds that have dropped. You know that the fighters are down in Abu Dhabi. Some of them are exiting the quarantine scene. Some have already done some of the media. What are you liking that you're hearing out of some of the fighters, you know, that are saying some of the, you know, sharing some of the positivity that a fighter should be experiencing as they go into these huge fights on Saturday?
Yeah, I mean, just from an action standpoint, the fights promise a lot, and there's so many storylines. I mean, I was taken away. We've had several media days, and in each media day, there's just layers and layers of storylines. So that's been obviously a very positive thing for fans and media, and it's been fun to see as well. But also, there's sort of a sense of, I don't know, a little bit of the unknown excitement, right? Abu Dhabi, Yas Island, although the UFC has been there before, it's still fairly new territory. You know, it's not like they go there every weekend. And this whole Fight Island concept, it kind of took a life of its own. And I know we're not going to get the octagon on the beach, but there's certainly different components in the whole Fight Island series that we're not used to seeing in just regular fights. So although it might not be that fantasy world that we created, there is a little bit of a different feel to it. So I'm curious to see once the broadcast rolls out and the fights roll out, if that's going to extend to the fights. But so far, it's been a fun event to cover.
What have you seen from Rose Namajunas? She's one of the popular ones who doesn't wear a strap right now and won't be fighting for a strap, at least on this particular card. But at one time, she held a strap, and I think she's one of the biggest stars in MMA in general, but of course in the world of WMMA. What do you kind of, what kind of vibes are you getting from her? Is she ready? She went through a lot this 2020.
Yeah, I mean, even if you rewind a little bit, when she lost to Jessica Andrade, she kind of went through a little bit of a dark period where she wasn't really sure if she wanted to do MMA. She was ready to walk away, and she was at a point where she was just going to wait and see what happened. So so that was there was some red flags as well, even before 2020. And then, you know, UFC 249 rolls out. She's supposed to fight Andrade there. We know that two of her family members closer passed away due to COVID-19. So very rough situation. So you always wonder, like, where is Rose at? But from watching her in the media day and talking to the media, it seems that she's pretty dialed in. She knows what's at hand. She's prepared for the fight against Andrade, and this is what she wants to do. I mean, there's nothing else she wants to do than get in that cage and fight. So I'm getting all good vibes from Rose Namajunas, which that's obviously expected, as we are used to seeing in fight weeks. But yeah, I think Rose is ready to go for UFC 251.
Danny, George and I talked about this earlier on our show. Jorge Masvidal in the main event. However, the BMF title is not on the line. It just seems like it's going to be something that went away. How do you feel about that? Would you like to see the BMF title be something that sort of gets passed around?
That's a great question. I've thought about it. I don't know how you guys feel, but I think if it does become a thing where people defend it and it can go around, I think it devalues a little bit the real belt, which obviously you never want to see that. But at the same time, the BMF belt has become sort of this very fun thing. I wouldn't throw out the BMF belt. I think the BMF belt maybe should just kept exclusive to Jorge Masvidal. I mean, the only two contenders, the only two fighters that were eligible to fight, you know, for the BMF, Nate Diaz and Jorge Masvidal. Doesn't get more BMF than that. But I would like to see the UFC, for example, I think with the whole Fight Island thing, it would have been a perfect opportunity to roll out a Fight Island belt and do a little tournament. You know, you don't have to be the biggest champion. You don't have to get the biggest contenders in the tournament, but just get, you know, eight bantamweights. You know, they could be outside of the top 15 and kind of do like a little bit of a tough situation there. But yeah, I think I would like to see more belts implemented, but maybe not the BMF one. I think the BMF one, I like to see that exclusively to Masvidal.
Are you a fan of 165 and 175? Being added and dropping 170 so that we go every 10 pounds from strawweight up to light heavyweight?
I am. I think it's needed. I would like to see another promotion outside of the UFC try it to see how it looks. But I think the more weight class, the better. For one, you know, it adds more belts in circulation. So, you know, we get more championship fights. We get more world-class fights. And I think all fans and everyone that is a fan of mixed martial arts would like to see that. And from what I've heard from fighters is that there's a lot of fighters that can't really make 155 but are too small to 170, or they're too small for 185 but could barely make 170. So I think adding another weight class in that range would do well to the UFC and MMA. Plus, like, look at the UFC lightweight division. Look at the UFC welterweight division. It's so crowded. I mean, anybody really in the top 10 can fight for a title. Everyone's like super skilled there. So if you make another division, it kind of takes a little bit away from that, but they're so stacked that I think it'll actually work out and make for some fights, fun fights as well.
Yeah, a perfect example is Masvidal would probably drop to 165. Yep. Because 55 is tough, but 70, he's usually outsized. And Till, who he beat, could probably, you know, he could probably live with those extra 5 pounds at 75 if 85 didn't work out for him. Mm-hmm. So it's almost like a poor example I'm giving because the smaller guy beat the bigger guy. But that's just, you know, you look at Darren Till, you're like, holy fuck, how does he make welterweight? Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And then Robert Whittaker, he might benefit from going back down to not necessarily 70, but just 75, because at one time, you know, he was a welterweight. But there's a lot of them. There's a lot. I think Colby Covington would probably be a 65 guy. I think, you know, Woodley would probably enjoy 75 and not have to contemplate 85. But yeah.
Donald Cerrone, 65.
There's a lot. Yes, exactly. Donald Cerrone. There's a lot of athletes that would love to, you know, jump in there and figure out one or two of those different weight classes. James Vick, I think, is another guy who was just mm-hmm. too massive for 55. But at 70, he never really, I guess, filled out his frame yet. You know, I he's still in the process. I'm not sure exactly where James Vick was. I knew he won 8 in a row, but then he lost 4 in a row. But anyway, all right. Well, we'll focus on UFC 251 on Saturday. This is Danny Segura, our colleague at MMA Junkie. He'll be joining us as we lead in to July 27th when Hablemos MMA. Hablamos MMA, excuse me, right? Or Hablemos? Hablamos.
Hablemos.
Hablemos. Hablemos, yeah, Hablemos MMA will be dropping here on our website, MMA Junkie, and it will be hosted by Danny Segura, and he'll have guests, and he'll be talking about this great sport of ours, but in Espanol. So thanks, Danny, for joining us, and let's continue this as much as we can as we lead into July 27th.
For sure. I appreciate the space. Always an honor to join you guys on this historic show. And yeah, looking forward to the future episodes.
All right. Thank you, sir. Have a good one. All All right, good times with my man from Colombia. He's really, really excited, and he said that the reception was good for him. So that was really good to hear.
I'm excited to hear his show. Mm-hmm. I don't know if I want to be a guest on it. My Spanish ain't that tip top like his, but I'm interested to hear some of these fighters because we get them on our show, and we're speaking in English, and they're pretty. Some of them are pretty colorful, but there's nothing like talking or speaking in your native tongue. Mm-hmm. It's just so much, especially if you speak Spanish, because it's so much funnier. Like, I think their personalities are going to come out a lot more, and it's going to be a crack up. I think I really do. Hopefully Danny can play along with some of these guys, because we have some jokesters out there.
Mm-hmm. And by the way, Danny, I think Valentin is a little bit more Peruvian than he might have. He's almost saying like she's just flying the flag, but she actually nationalized herself, has Peruvian citizenship, lived there for 5 years, spoke the language, probably can cook a hell of a Peruvian meal.
Always that
always el sabor. And always has the flag too.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I'm glad he mentioned Peru. And
Can I put you on the spot?
He's also a fan of 65 and 75. So yeah, sure.
Is Valentina more Peruvian than Tito is Mexican?
Yeah.
Yeah.
For sure.
Because they both do that thing where they have the double flag, right?
Dude, she lived there for 5 years. She speaks the language. I don't think I've ever heard Tito Ortiz speak Spanish.
Yeah.
So she's more Peruvian than Tito's Mexican. Yeah. And even though she
more lived Peruvian than us?
Well, she does have a dual passport. She might be, dude.
Think so?
She might be, but we're more Peruvian than Tito's Mexican.
Yeah, so we're like in the middle of those two.
We're in the middle, yeah. But maybe, maybe not. I don't know. Like,
think of some of the things on our resume. Machu Picchu.
I can match her on one America. Thing, though. I know. But if she was like, if she were to get really agitated and go, hey, look, I was in a shootout in Peru. I'd go, hey, look, I was in a cop chase in Peru.
Yeah, that is good.
So, I don't know.
I got shot by a cannon in Peru.
That's true.
That's something.
That's true.
I got fucking blown away, dude. Almost like in the movies, into a fruit stand and everything.
How old were you?
Like 11 or 12 or something. And I just looked at that thing and went, oh, that's cute. Yeah, I had no idea what it was going to do. It just hit me in the back like Jesse James, and I went flying.
Jesse James? Oh, what? He shot people in the back?
Yeah, didn't he get shot in the back? Or?
Oh, I think Wild Bill Hickok shot him. I can't remember if it was in the back or... Wait, no, I think Wild Bill Hickok got shot in the back. I can't remember, yeah.
I don't know. I just know I got trounced.
All that gunslinger stuff, dude. All those Western... I used to know a little bit about them, and now I've kind of forgotten it. But I think Wild Bill Hickok was playing poker in South Dakota, and somebody named Pat Garrett, I think, may have shot him.
Billy the Kid.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
Somebody shot... No.
Billy the Kid was shot by Pat Garrett.
Was he? Oh, okay.
I'm positive of that.
Yeah. So Wild Bill Hickok, I think he was playing, and he had the dead man's hand, which I think is aces over eights or something like that, and he got shot in the middle of a poker game. And to do that back then, hell, you might as well just... It might as well be a homicide-suicide if you're going to kill someone when they're not looking. And if it's in a saloon in a poker game, no one's going to think much of you, man. They're just going to shoot you, I guess. But
Jesse James was shot by Bob Ford.
Okay. Who was Wild Bill Hickok shot by?
Wild Bill Hickok. Wait, is that Billy the Kid?
Who?
Isn't that one of his aliases?
No. Wild Bill Hickok was actually a lawman, if I'm not mistaken. That's why I should have been more into that HBO series, Deadwood. Mm-hmm. And I tried to get into it, and I don't know what happened. Maybe I was too into Sopranos or who knows what, and I threw in the towel. There's a few I didn't finish, like The Wire and Deadwood, that I needed to. I didn't even finish Chuck Zito's. What was his called? Oz. I need to finish that. Now, that one I got into like 5 or 6 seasons, so there wouldn't be much there left, but... Anyway,
he was playing poker and
who shot him?
A drunk man named Jack McCall.
Wow. All right.
I'm surprised you're like an expert on Westerns. Bacon cheeseburgers.
All right. So listen, folks, check out Dan Tom's podcast, Protect Your Neck. He'll break down the cards. We've kind of given you some parlay picks that we have. And join us on Saturday for UFC 251, the watch along there. 3 title fights. It's going to be a fun time. 10 Eastern, 7 Pacific. And keep it locked on MMA Junkie throughout the week. We got tons of coverage of the event and, of course, all of the other stories out there that tie in to this great sport of ours. On the way out, I'll tell you, Thiago Santos signed for Glover Teixeira, right? That's a big fight right there.
Yeah.
So that starts to connect the pieces. Now who's left? Jan Blachowicz and Dominic Reyes and John Jones. What's happening? I don't know. I think Dana's probably like, I'll fucking worry about that when I get home. But for now, at least we know that those two are out of the picture. Folks, enjoy your evening and stay safe, stay sane. Stay indoors if they ask, and always be a champion.